Eusebius McKaiser on Cape Talk.
Your number one news and talk station.
6 minutes after 11, and from politics to mental illness, really, and mental conditions and anguish that we experience that we don't talk about enough. Everyone was going crazy when our fave Serena Williams had given birth, of course, and you see the pictures. She was on the front page of Vogue magazine as well. And it was incredible when you then read the story, as I did, and then you discover that actually the process of giving birth and the relationship between mom and newborn can be very complicated. And I must say, I'd kind of vaguely known that there's something called postpartum depression, but I know nothing about the condition, and I had no clue how widespread it is as well, even here in South Africa, where 1 in 3 women suffer from it. And it got me thinking that there's a conversation here worth opening up, and that's what I want to do this hour. And I want moms to call in. I want women to share their experiences in a way that is safe. There's absolutely no shame around it. We have this weird thing in society where, as a result of our socialization, we are told what feelings to feel when we have certain experiences. You are supposed to love your pregnancy, enjoy your pregnancy. You are supposed to have happy thoughts that little Eusebius had been born this morning. But for some moms, the process can leave you, as you know better than me, far be it from me to mansplain it, I want you to call in, but it can be an incredibly harrowing experience at an emotional level, but there isn't necessarily the space to fess up and to say, you know what, I'm going through these conflicting feelings. Little Eusebius is crying, and I just feel like throwing him against the wall, but I feel bad for feeling it. So not only do you not know how to handle the newborn baby, but in addition to that, you also have to deal with this second-order guilt about how you are feeling. And many of us do not know about these conditions because, like I said, in the public space, we don't necessarily provide the space for people to talk about an experience that we romanticize in poetry, in film, in the arts, in the media, as this perfect, beautiful process that is the exemplar of being a woman. You're now a mother with your beautiful little kid that looks like you or dad, and everyone is fawning over them. But on the inside, many women go through a lot, as Serena Williams has. And I hope that you will call in and have this conversation and share your experiences. If you're in Cape Town, you can do so on 021-446-0567. And if you are here in Johannesburg, you can join the conversation on 011-883-0702 and break the silence. Break the silence. You have no control over the emotions that wash over you. You are only responsible, perhaps, for how you deal with it. And when this discussion started growing a little bit of legs over the last couple of weeks on social media, one of the people who actually tweeted about it was Mel Barlow. We all know Mel, Metro FM radio news anchor, broadcaster. She's just done everything in broadcasting, and we love her to bits. I was hoping she'd be in the studio, but I forgot to put on my perfume, so just as well. She's actually on the phone this morning. Absolutely love her work, and thought it was particularly brave and important that someone of her stature was able to express how important this topic is. Mel, thank you so much for agreeing to come on the show and for making time to be with us. I really do appreciate it.
Good morning, Eusebius. Thank you so much for having me on.
Mel, just tell us what your experience was. I mean, you're a mom who, obviously, you love your kids. We follow you on social media. That's a very important part of who you are. But like I said, secretly, a lot of moms go through the most, and we just don't talk about it because of social memes that say you must be permanently happy as mom.
Yeah. It was an interesting thing for me because I have 2 kids, and my oldest is now 11, and my daughter is 6. And my first pregnancy was pretty straightforward, you know, labor. And just as a baby, my son was very easy. So, you know, which makes you think, oh, I can do this again, you know. And then we decided to have a second child, just my daughter, who's now 6. And it was after her birth that I found myself struggling. I feel so bad because I think to myself, but this is what I wanted, you know. So there's a tremendous amount of of shame and guilt, and you think to yourself, but this is what I wanted. Why do I feel so bad about it? And you think to yourself, but I have one. Why is it different with the second one? And it really, it felt really bad, and I was sleep deprived, exhausted all the time, irritable, angry, and you don't know what is. You know, I had a first child to compare it to, so I thought, okay, well, it's a little phase. I'll get over it. You know, it's when they're very little, and once she maybe starts sleeping through the night, and once she starts doing this or that, it'll start to get better. But it didn't, and it actually felt like it was just getting worse.
So what were the kinds of things that came up for you? Was it like the crying? Was it the behavior of the baby? What kind of feelings were you experiencing after the second birth?
It very much was that, so my daughter was a demanding baby, very different from my son. So I don't know if I was in shock what happened. But I was like, wait a minute. And you say to yourself, but I'm doing the exact same things I did with the first one. Why is it not working? But just in terms of feeding, like I say, obviously, I think every new mom is exhausted because little babies are a lot of work. But then at some point, you kind of start to feel resentful. You're like, why did I do this? Why did I do this? Why did I do this again? So there's that element of being resentful about the baby being there, and then the guilt that comes with it because you're like, this is what I wanted. And then also on the days that were particularly bad, where it had been maybe a couple of days of really not sleeping well, and you still get up and you go to work, and then you come back and you're dealing with the baby, and it's difficulty around whether it's the eating or whether it's the whatever else. You know, there literally were days where I felt like I wanted to run away, like where I seriously in my head debated, how bad would it be if I just said to my husband, I can't do this.
Yeah,
I can't do this. I'm leaving them with you, and I'm going to go, and literally not know how long I'm going to be gone for, because that's what it felt like. It felt like I needed to get away, like I needed to escape. And I think it resonates with so many people, because I'm in a position where I had support. You know, I had a partner, I had a nanny, but it still wasn't enough for me.
It must have been exacerbated by the fact that we don't have, in the public space, as I said, we don't recognize that actually many women go through this. It's postpartum depression. There's a name to it. It is very serious. And there you are, and you think to yourself, but I'm living the life. Here I am. I'm Mel Bala. I've got all the support structures. I've got the resources. How did you process the guilt? Was it a soliloquy with yourself, or were you able to voice it to your BFFs or to your husband even, or were you really having this conversation only with yourself initially?
I think for a long time I had it with myself. You know, because you also don't want to seem ungrateful.
Yes.
You know, I have friends who've struggled with fertility who want nothing more than to desperately either have a child or another child. And so you can't turn around and say to them, oh, but, you know, I have two and it's awful. So you feel guilty about that as well. But for a long time, it was a conversation I had with myself to myself, because... And I know people mean well when they're, oh, you're so lucky. It's such a blessing. Oh, and you can't turn around and go, I don't feel like they're a blessing right now, you know. So I had that conversation internally and kind of tried to rationalize, because I knew theoretically what postpartum depression is. I'd also read about it. I'd also, you know, in the baby magazines, the pregnancy magazines. So you know what it is in theory. But when you're going through it, to try and make sense of it is very difficult, because it is a chemical imbalance that takes place. And so you aren't able to make sense of it in as much as you know the theory, but the practicality of living it every single day, you just feel like you're going stir crazy.
I'm going to bring in Linda Lewis in a second, but just a last question for you, Mel. What for you was a breakthrough moment in terms of accepting that who you are as mom and the fact that you are a mom who does the most for her children is not going to be undermined by acknowledging what you are going through? How did you manage to get out of that rut and out of the guilt that comes with all these memes that say it's a blessing, other women can't fall pregnant? Because now you're at a point where you can step back reflectively. They are a little bit older. I would imagine that makes it easier.
Yeah.
But at the time, what was your journey out of this darkness?
I'd say it was a slow process. You know, I I battled depression previously many years ago, and I think it was particularly with my kids and with my daughter. It was probably about, and I will not lie to you, about when she was around 2 years old, that I realized it's not just a phase.
Mm.
I'm not just tired. I'm not just cranky. It's more than that. There's something actually wrong, which led me to then calling up my doctor who I'd seen previously and saying, I think I need help.
Mm.
And even that is not a definitive, I need help, help me. It's, I think I need help.
Yes.
Am I right? Am I wrong? Can you help me? And, you know, we spoke, because you still aren't sure. Mm. So we spoke, and she was like, it's okay. You know, this is what we'll do. We'll put you on a script for, you know, X, Y, Z, and so on. And that, like I said, it was about 2 years, when my daughter was about 2 years old.
Mm. I do got to ask you this as well. I don't want to hog them. I mean, I can talk to you the whole day. I just love hearing your reflections. But now that your kids are older, Mel, because what's interesting about this is after the postpartum discussion went viral online,
mm-hmm.
It was interesting how there were other parts of the parenting dilemma that people also speak about. Pumla Gqola, for example, writes beautifully in her book how she has had to learn to not feel bad wanting to have her own career as a busy feminist academic who is madly in love with her boy that she's raising. And there was also guilt associated later on for her with what it means to be an individual who is still allowed to have a life. So now that your kids are a little bit older, how do you manage that to also not feel guilt that you are Mel with still a full career and life ahead of you?
Mm-hmm.
In relation to your kids and where they fit into your life?
I know it's the buzzword for sort of 2017 going into 2018 when we say self-care, but it is so true. You can't pour from an empty cup. And I realize that in as much as I'm pulling myself in 1,000 directions, trying to do the best, be present, be engaged, be involved, you know, all these things, when I got to the point where there was nothing left to give from, I realized this is not going to work. And so over the last, as you say, when your kids are older, it does become easier. And I've learned to become a little selfish, you know, when they have wants versus needs, if they want to go to their favorite restaurant or they want to do this, I'll weigh it up and say, well, what do I want to do?
Absolutely.
Today I want to stay at home and sleep. Actually, that's what I want to do. And so we're going to do that. And my kids, the first time I said it, I think they nearly fell over. They were like, what do you mean? What do you mean we're not going anywhere? What do you mean? You know, but you have to do that. You have to say, today I'm tired. I want to sleep. And I've also taken to explaining to them that mommies also get tired. Or mommies also get cranky or irritable or, you know, I need a nap, guys. I need to just, because I want them to also have a better sense of what being a mother is for both my son and my daughter. That it's not that you're always on 24/7, that moms also need a little time out to themselves.
And break that cycle that way.
Correct.
Absolutely.
Correct.
Mel, we're going to keep you on a little bit just because we love hanging out with you. It's 19 minutes after 11.
Eusebius Mackayzer on your number one news and talk station.
And already the lines are going crazy. But before I hear from you, I want to introduce our other expert, who's a psychologist who specializes in perinatal wellness at the Postnatal Depression Support Association. But beyond this huge academic title for Linda, the experiences of Mel are all too real because she's had similar experiences, quite apart from having done work in this area as a professional. And Linda joins us in the Cape Talk studio. Linda, thank you so much for being available today.
Thank you, Eusebius, and thank you for bringing this vital topic to the public. It is needs to come out of the closet. And I'm just listening to Mel and her frank honesty, which I can just say is going to be a gift to every woman and an insight into every father who's listening.
And your own experiences, I mean, your interest in this is not just intellectual, Linda. Talk to us a little bit, firstly, about your experience, and then let's break the silence in terms of what the data does tell us. If I'm not mistaken, at least 1 in 3 South African women will experience what Mel experienced.
I would say it's 1 in 4 because there are not everybody reports it. And it is, there's not access to reporting it. So many women fall through the net. And actually, there was a study done in Khayelitsha where they found that 37% of women actually suffer from, I call it postnatal distress, because very often it's not just depression. There is a lot of anxiety sometimes around, am I being a good enough mother? What is a good enough mother? Anxiety over sleep deprivation, over the health of your child, over your guilt. So there is a spectrum within postnatal distress, from mild adjustment to actually on the other end of the spectrum is postnatal psychosis, which is very rare, but that is the sensationalized aspect of women who become psychotic and could possibly commit infanticide. And so we need to be careful to, as mothers, to associate the anxiety, depression side without including that in the baby blues. Everyone suffers from the baby blues except for 1 in 10 people. The baby blues is normal. Everyone talks about it. And I'm listening to Mel and hearing that after 2 years, she received help. I mean, I know that for me, it started, this sense of anxiety started on day one. So unexpected. And at that time, my son is now 24. It was unheard of. I had not heard of one single person who had been through what I was going through. So the shame and the guilt and being so misunderstood was absolutely paralyzing for me.
At what point, Linda, should a woman know that you probably need to reach out? Like Mel was saying, for her, part of that conversation she had with herself was, maybe that's just a phase, particularly because as this was the second time that she had given birth, the first time was very different, so maybe it's very hard to know when to reach out to a professional like yourself.
For me, the key factor is when I'm not feeling like the person I know myself to be, and when others are not experiencing me as the person they know me to be, then there's a little trigger that must go off in your mind that says, maybe something's going on here. If that continues for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, then it is essential that you get an assessment, because the problem is when it spirals out of control.
Absolutely. Let's take a break there, Linda, for now, 24 minutes after 11. I'm very grateful to have Linda Lewis with us, a psychologist specializing in perinatal wellness, and also Mel Bala sharing her experiences. And I can see on my Twitter timeline how many of you can identify with this. We're breaking the silence in relation to this under-discussed condition of postnatal distress. What have been your experiences? Give us a call. Pamela, Gary, Matsepo, Ntsako, I'm going to take all of your calls on the other side of this, and then I'm going to get back to my guests as well, who have been very generous in sharing their experiences when there is almost a taboo in relation to what are deemed to be negative feelings that a parent is not allowed to have, because after all, it is, as Mel said, it's supposed to be a blessing to become mom or to become dad. What are your experiences? Let's break the silence.
Eusebius Makaiser on Cape Talk, your number one news and talk station. Call Eusebius on
021-446-0567.
28 minutes after 11, if you've just joined us, we're putting the spotlight this hour on postnatal distress, which is a very serious, long-lasting condition that is more than just baby blues. And we don't speak about it often enough and can manifest as feelings of sorrow, moodiness, lack of sleep, exhaustion, and then feeling angry with yourself for having these feelings about your baby. And maybe you've gone through that and you're listening to Mel Bala sharing her story with us and her lessons that she has learned along the way, and also psychologist Linda Lewis. But let's go to the lines and hear a little bit from you, then I'll get back to my guest. Pamela, thank you so much for holding on. You've listened to my two guests share their stories. What comes up for you? What do you want to talk about?
Hi, good morning. I've not had postnatal depression myself, but I was a community midwife in England for many years. And there, when the moms go home, they actually have a midwife come and visit them for 10 days and up to 6 weeks if they need it. And so we used to come across and identify the beginnings of postnatal depression. And I think what a lot of people don't seem to understand is that postnatal depression can actually start while you're still pregnant. A lot of the symptoms actually begin at about 34 or 36 weeks.
Mm.
And some of them also, if you can be at 6 months before you suddenly start developing the symptoms. So postnatal distress doesn't actually start straight after the baby. You can be normal, in inverted commas, for many months before the symptoms actually start to manifest themselves. So it can be quite serious. And it's amazing how many dads also suffer from a form of postnatal depression with the stress of having to care for this new baby financially and physically. So, yes, it's time that we actually acknowledge that and realize that having a baby is not all balloons and cakes and smiles.
Mm, absolutely. And we'll pick up on that on the other side of news. Gary, welcome to the show.
Hi, Eusebius.
Hi there. Go ahead.
Eusebius, that's Gary here. Eusebius, I'd just like to concur with your guests. For me, the thing is that far too little emphasis is put on postpartum depression. And unfortunately, by the time it's diagnosed, it's invariably too late. And a lot of fathers are left by the wayside because their princess that they married is now suddenly this completely different person that they don't know how to handle. And the thing for me that I've come to over the years speaking to many, many fathers is that also this thing of having the first child and how wonderful and amazing it was, and then, the second pregnancy turns into this total disaster. I personally believe that there is not enough, I wouldn't say information, but there's not enough emphasis and support given to specifically mothers and for fathers to be able to identify and to assist with it.
Is it something Gary, not to be too personal, is it something you've experienced as well?
Yeah. Unfortunately, I'm married this wonderful woman. We still together, but separated.
Mm.
And by the time she actually sat me down, it was already 6 or 7 months later after the second birth. And, by then, unfortunately, and sadly, the damage was done. And that's the thing is me having spoken to many, many fathers. Yeah. By the time the mother comes and says to the dad, listen, we have a problem. There's too much water that's gone under the bridge and too much damage has been done to be actually to pull the relationship back.
Mm, absolutely. And we'll get into that in a second. But
Eusebius McKaiser on 702 and Cape Talk.
Mel, I want to come back to you. And I think, one can do many programs on this and write a book about it. A lot of it is obviously very difficult conversation, but some of it also with the benefit of hindsight can make you laugh. Reflect a little bit for me, Mel, on the fact that maybe when there's the euphoria of starting a new family, one of the things that you and many of your friends might have realized only years later is that you don't necessarily think through what is about to happen when you are thinking about having children.
Absolutely. I think friends and I joke that we came from a not woke generation. So, you kind of think, oh, I'll get married one day, I'll have kids, it'll be great. But not actually examining what does that mean and whether that is something that you actually want. And so my best friend and I, probably about 2-3 years ago, we were just chatting and it came up and we realized that we never actually sat and thought through, do I really want to have children? And when I have children, how is my life going to change?
Mm.
What does that mean for my career, for myself, for my, for a partner that I'm with or a husband that I'm with? What are these things that will fundamentally change the rest of your life? And we kind of went into it blind. I wish I had maybe taken time out back then and said, right, so if I have kids, how is my life going to change?
Yes.
And am I ready for it?
So when your boy turned, 3 or 4 years old, was it a shock to your system to realize that it's a lifetime commitment?
Yeah, I joke about it and I say that, when he turned 4, we were sitting in the lounge one day and I was like, this guy's not going anywhere. No one's coming to get him. Like, what's happening? Because then you've outgrown the baby phase and now they're toddlers and then you start thinking school applications. And then it kind of, for me personally, it sunk in like, okay, he's here for life, And that is a big thing. I think we, as women, we really, I'm not saying every woman has that experience, but I think, you know, this thing of, oh, have a baby. People say, oh, I must have, I'll have another one. Oh, and it just kind of gets thrown around without really examining what it is about.
Given how little discussion there is publicly about these conflicting emotions and feelings, Mel, is it compounded then when you are going through it, when you look around and you see the performance of parenthood that often happens in how newborns with mom on the cover of magazines, etc., etc., that probably doesn't help to think of your own internal monologue as something that is quite common. You must at that point think, geez, am I feeling self-inflicted?
You know, this is such a difficult thing, I think, to talk about, because I really believe every mother is just trying her best.
Mm.
And when you're trying your best for your child, you're not doing it to put pressure on other mothers. So that pressure becomes self-inflicted, which I think happened for me. You know, I chose to stop breastfeeding at about 5 months with each of my kids because it was a lot for me. And then you mention it to someone and someone will be like, oh, I breastfed for at least 2 years, which worked for them, but it wouldn't have worked for me.
Mm.
Or I chose to send my daughter to creche when she was 11 months because I needed that space. And they're, oh, so early. You should wait until they're like two.
Yes.
So in those comments that get made, I don't think any mother's trying to make another mother feel bad.
Yeah.
It's what worked for them. But you take that on and you think, okay, I'm terrible because I have to go back to work and so I have to send my kids to creche, but I'd rather be home, but I don't really want to be home because I need to speak to adults, like other adults.
Yes.
So it is this constant kind of balance around when people are living their lives and being parents that what seems as a performance you don't take on.
Absolutely.
Internally, and kind of have that be the benchmark that you're weighing yourself against.
Mm.
Sometimes I can't get to the school, you know, mom reading circles because it conflicts with me being on air.
Yes.
Or I can't get to the, you know, I can't bake cupcakes or whatever it is. And you kind of have to make peace. Yes, I know. Don't
we saw your celebrity efforts.
Clearly now you know my secret. It comes out of box. But anyway. You know, and you've got to learn to kind of let that go,
yes.
Which is what I've done. I can't, there are certain things I can't do. It's never going to happen. And I've made peace with it. And my kids will say, oh, but so-and-so's mom. And I'm like, that's great for so-and-so's mom.
Yeah.
But I can't do it.
I'm very curious to know what it has done for your relationship with your kids to learn to let go, Mel. So, for example, to say, you know what? Sometimes mommy's cranky. Sometimes mommy's tired. Mom does not want to go to the mall today. And they were shocked the first time they realized they were not the center of the universe. They were a part of the family life.
Mm-hmm.
But what has been the effect on your relationship with them?
I think so much better. Without a doubt, you know, and also again, it comes back to them being older and now being able to understand. Where I'll hear my son say to my daughter, "Don't go bother mom," you know, she's
yes.
having a nap, as I'm kind of going, taking a lie down, or no, don't go bug her or whatever. Because in the same grace that I want them to extend to me, they get it in return.
Mm.
So when they say, and they know, you can say, "I'm grumpy," or "I'm tired," or "I'm moody," or "I had a bad day at school." And our thing is, you're absolutely entitled to that feeling. You
yes.
just don't take it out on someone else. So I want them to get to understand that, you know, going forward and as they grow up, that you're absolutely entitled to feel the way you feel.
Yeah.
Just don't take it out on other people. When you feel that way, rather take a moment, take a beat, go to your room, have a lie down, have a chill, whatever it is, until you're able to kind of work through it. And then we can talk through it if you want to.
Absolutely.
You know, obviously you moderate what you tell your kids when they say, why are you grumpy or why are you angry? Or,
yes.
you know, it might be like, oh, it's a work thing or, you know, without going into explicit details, but to understand that we're not perfect.
Absolutely.
There's no such thing as a perfect mom.
Matepo, thank you so much for holding on and thanks for calling in.
Yes, you see, thank you so much for taking my call. And I'd just like to say also, I don't know if you have time after this call, I'd just like to speak to you about something else related that has to do with medical doctors and something that happened to me previously. But
I'll get your details. Yeah, don't worry. It's okay. We'll make time. You can
thank
breathe
you.
A little bit. But obviously, this topic obviously resonates with you, yeah?
Mm-hmm. so much, Eusebius. I think my postnatal depression was caused by infertility. I spent like 4 years trying to get pregnant and not being able to be successful. Eventually, I did get pregnant, but I thought when I got pregnant that I was going to be so happy. And I thought I was going to be complete because I struggled for 4 years to get a child financially, drained me everything. But when Caleb was born, the first thing I looked at him was I didn't have a feeling for him. I just looked at him and I saw this little person, no feeling whatsoever, and something that totally happened. I lost control. I'm only saying I'm this person who's in control of things, finance and everything. I started losing control. Mm. I remember I spent like 2 days without even bathing, and I didn't even know why. I just sat there. I just started eating. I started becoming depressed. Everything will make me cry. Just cry for any reason. And when my son cried, I looked at him so funny, like, what the hell? What must I do for you now? You know, I really felt helpless. I thank God for my husband because he really stood up for me. And I still look at him even now and think, why did this God give me this guy, you know, who was so intelligent to think? I don't know if he was aware that I was going through depression, but him being calm when I was going through the storm, I'm still going through the whole thing. And I believe that I get help because I'm aware of it right now, because I had to diagnose myself through Google because nobody had told me that when I give birth, that something like this will happen. And my suggestion to the medical people, especially when you have a baby, we should have this available to us, because as much as you are very happy about getting your baby, nobody tells you that you can actually hate your baby when they're born.
Sure.
I was not feeling anything. And I remember my husband was actually encouraging me to breastfeed because he felt that I will get closer to the baby, and it did. It did. I breastfed for 2 years. My son is 2 years. Mm. And then that really helped because I bonded with him, and now look at him like a baby. I now feel for him, and it's only a year. He's 2 years, but it's only a year now. But when he cries, I feel that, you know, that feeling of a mother that my child is crying. Mm. And postnatal depression is really, really serious, especially for Black cultures. We don't diagnose it because we think if your child is born and somebody's acting very weird, they're lazy, or what's wrong with them, really?
Yes,
it's a baby. You know,
absolute
and it's very
nonsense.
Easy for some people to get pregnant, so they really cannot relate to you.
Mm.
So and my contribution is that it's real, and I feel like we should be taught about this even in hospital, because they'll teach you to bath your baby when they're born. I didn't even care about the baby's bath. My mother took care of that because I really didn't care about the baby. So we should really be giving pamphlets. Somebody must counsel you and talk to you to say, this is what you can feel, this is might come to you.
Absolutely.
And then we should be just really be prepared.
Mm.
So thank you, Mel, for sharing your story, especially because she is somebody that we look up to. We don't really see that them as having problems. If they talk about things like this and we relate to them,
yes,
we really feel like I'm normal.
Absolutely.
I'm not going crazy, because if Google was not there, I was going to diagnose myself as bipolar or something. So I'm anxious every day.
Yeah.
I'm anxious. I'm trying to calm down. I'm going to the homeopath to calm myself down, and he's really said to me that you are anxious, you really need to calm down, and he's giving me something. So I'm really taking care of myself. So
thank you for your generosity and for sharing your story. My producers will give you my details. Linda, there's just so much to react to. The callers mentioned how dads are affected. Apparently they can also have postnatal. There was the point raised that in fact it can start during pregnancy. Someone has actually tagged me on Twitter on a master's thesis they did about prenatal depression that they have had a look at. And then there's the point that Matsepo makes, which is how little information is made available, including at clinics and in public healthcare facilities.
Yes, Eusebius, and just to tell Gary that he is not alone. Fathers are the invisible sufferers when their partners suffer from PND, and they too can suffer from PND. And not just as a result of what is going on in the family, but in their own way. And that is often exhibited through working longer hours, avoiding being at home, calling it stress. And it's very seldom acknowledged that they actually are suffering from something that is extremely emotional and common. But coming on to during the pregnancy, antenatal depression is one of the biggest predictors of postnatal depression. Now, some people, of course, we know have unplanned pregnancies, in which case it can take a lot of time to come to terms with that. But when you are feeling ambivalent during the pregnancy about having that child, it is very important to seek help, because that can carry through to when that baby is born. And, you know, if there is such a thing as a maternal instinct, it has been buried in the proliferation of books and social media telling you how to be a good mother.
You know, yes.
And there's this myth that there's going to be an immediate surge of maternal bonding. And as Motsepe says, it didn't happen. And then you think, I'm not a good enough mother. And then there is breastfeeding, and that doesn't come naturally to all mothers. Then you think, I'm really not a good mother. And then there is the bonding and the sense of, oh my gosh, I don't know this child. I don't know if I'm ever going to connect. And let's face it, it's the only personality, it's the only person you are forced into a relationship with, whether there's a good fit or not. So you have to negotiate that your whole life.
14 minutes before noon. What an incredible eye-opening conversation. Thank you for your generosity in calling and sharing your experiences. We won't be able to get through everyone's calls, but clearly this topic has touched many people. Zuki and Lynn, I'm going to take your stories on the other side of this and hear from your experiences. And then we're going to close out the show with some final remarks from Mel Bala and Linda Lewis.
Cape Talk.
Cape Talk.
Eusebius is on Twitter at Eusebius.
Indeed, and some of you are tweeting, and this resonates deeply with you. Lerato tweets, for example, my gosh, Eusebius, I can so relate. And I had it worse because apparently I was supposed to enjoy giving birth and being a new mom. I was young and employed. I was married. But the truth is, I was overwhelmed, and it was just so, so hard. Warren tweets, being a mother is hard enough. It does not need the added pressure of being perfect on top of that, with all sorts of templates for how you're supposed to behave. Zuki, thanks so much for your patience.
Hi, Eusebius. Sure. Thank you so much for actually giving space for this conversation. I'm calling in because I recently started a blog to share my experience, and I think what Motsepe just mentioned is precisely what resonates. The fact that you had to rely on Google is very telling of just the extent of the taboo-ness and the fact that we don't speak about it, and yet mothers and families have been having children for so many years. And so I decided to start a blog. I had prenatal depression that was undiagnosed. I went through my whole pregnancy and hated every single day of it and hated myself for it because I was certain I was the first and only person to ever not be thrilled and didn't want people to touch me. I didn't want people to acknowledge that they see this bump growing on my body. You know, things like that would just invoke anger and anxiety inside of me. And eventually got help when my son was 6 months old. And even at that point, I think Linda said earlier that at the point that you feel like I can see I'm not myself and the people around me are not experiencing me as myself is a very telling sign. And I think for that entire 18 months up until I got help, I literally felt like I was watching a movie of a foreign person that I'd never recognized. And so that's really why I decided I'm going to start this conversation. And if nothing else, for me, if from the blog there's one person who realizes that help is in reach and that it's not that something is wrong with them, it's even more powerful. And I speak about all things. The not feeling happy when the baby pops out and felt absolutely nothing for the child. Interestingly for me, breastfeeding became my lifeline because I bore such guilt on myself for not wanting this child, for not loving this child. And so I needed some sense of purpose that made me feel like, okay, there's one thing that I'm doing right. And so I breastfed obsessively. And that became a pull for me until I got a bit of help. I would measure out, breastfeeds. At that point, we were living abroad as well. I would be shipping milk across the country from, each day just to make sure that I achieved something in this hopelessness that I was experiencing.
Zuki, what is the blog?
It's called Four Bags, A Baby and a Subway. long story.
I'm going to check it out. Yeah, it sounds very, very cool. Yeah, thank you for opening up. Much appreciated. So many other people who wanted to call in and give their viewpoints. We can't take everyone. We just have space for one final caller. Lynn in Rondebosch, you've been holding on. What has come up for you this hour as you've listened to the different stories?
Hey, Eusebius. Good morning. Basically, I also wanted to just say and reiterate what a lot of your callers said. I was one of those people that had depression after giving birth to my daughter. That's now 8 years old. I've done all the reading before I had her. I had such an easy pregnancy. Then I went into labor, and after the second day, I couldn't do a natural birth, and then they had to take the baby out. And since the moment my child came out of my body, I had a feeling of resentment, and I still can't understand it. And it, like I said, it was never diagnosed, but I knew what I had, and I spoke about it. But then there was also this thing about family members almost telling me, but what is this thing? Like, in colored community, people have babies all the time, and what makes you different? And then the other side to this is that once you have a baby, then people, family, they come and visit, they knock on your door, and they just expect you to be, oh, this is my baby, and showing it off. And at that time in my life, I did not want that. I didn't want so many people around me. It was so invasive. Everybody wanting to place my boobs and piercing things up in my body because this is what you need. It was the most awful time in my entire life, Eusebius. If people ask me, so when did you get over this?
Yeah.
I must honestly say that I don't think it ever stopped. I think I've learned to deal with it differently. And that's why I loved what Mel said, where she said that she can go and lie down and now her kids understand that it's mom time. Yes. And that's how mom's feeling. I think, in fact, Eusebius, I am still trying to make up for the fact that I was such an absent mother when my child was born. I didn't bath her. Like a month into having her, I told my husband I wanted a divorce. I didn't want a divorce. I don't still want to divorce him. I love him. I loved him then. But it was the feelings that I had was so overwhelming. I just wanted to get out of my life. And today, at times, my child is 8 years old. I know I'm doing a good job at being a mother, but I still have that extreme feeling of guilt.
Sure. Mel, what incredible reflections from all the women who have called in, and Lynn especially. What particularly struck me there was Lynn's description of how literally you are reduced to a body that everyone thinks that they can prod. Mel, are you there?
Oh, hi, sorry. I thought you were speaking to Linda. She's absolutely right. You know, I think every single one of your callers has touched on something. I think for me, the two most important takeaways of this is really, one is allowing the spectrum, which Linda mentioned earlier, you know. So not every postpartum depression is going to be on the severe end of it going into psychosis. And not every one of it is just a couple of rough nights. You know, there is the spectrum, and every single one of those feelings and emotions and the range that you have is valid. And secondly, I want women to hear me when I say ask for help. Because as you asked me earlier, did I tell a bestie, did I whatever? You know, you kind of have this running joke when you all have babies and you're all about the same age, and someone will say rough night, and you go, eh, you know. When in fact it's more than a rough night.
Yes.
And to actually to speak to someone you trust, whether it's your mom, your sis, your best friend, and say, I'm not coping. It's more than just a couple of hours. It's not something a nap will fix. I'm not coping. And actually reach out, because as every single one of your callers has said, is to know that you're not alone in itself gives you such a boost, gives you such a sense of like, oh, wait, there are other women out there who feel like this. I could speak to someone about it, and they're not going to judge me for it.
Yes, absolutely. Linda, we've got less than a minute left. You can have the final say. I can't help but think, as I'm stepping back and hearing all these amazing stories from you, Mel, and all the women that have called in, that not only in a patriarchal world do we tell women what to do with your bodies, we also have the audacity to tell you what to feel.
Yes, and what that does is make you feel less than. So it's about cutting out those voices of judgment and listening to what works for you. And the thing I want to say, and to Zuki, is that everybody can recover from PND. Everybody. You need to get help. This does not have to linger on for years and years. Honestly, people who seek help from early on, they inevitably feel like themselves and the mothers that they want to be at some stage. So I just implore every mother out there, and I implore fathers to be attentive and to be the ones also to call for help, not just for themselves, but for their partners, so that this does not spiral out of control.
Linda, Lewis, thank you so much for your expertise and your generosity. Mel, thank you so much as well for sharing your story and your reflections and bringing a lightness to what is obviously a very serious conversation. Thank you, Mel.
Thank you, UCBS. Take care.
Cheers.